Hi, everybody. I am so, so, so excited to have Mr. Michael Kerr on the podcast today. He's a speaker. He's an author. He's an all-around fantastic guy. And he's the author of The Jerk-Free Workplace, as well as several other books about humor in the workplace. And I thought it'd be very interesting to have him on and talk about how humor is also the bridge between human connection. And I thought that it would just be super endearing and interesting to have a conversation about that. Now, I have so many questions for you, Michael. But first of all, thank you for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here, David.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a business owner, I have about 87 questions regarding humor in the workplace. But as you know, this is a show about, how, for the general public, we have friends, we have family, we have people in our lives, we love them, and we want to connect better with them. So that's kind of the context, right? Tell us, I guess the backstory. How did you get into what you do, connecting people with humor?
Yeah, so a lifetime ago, more than 20 years ago, I worked in an organization whose name shall remain, well, nameless, because this organization, and I became a senior manager in this organization, the culture in this organization became, how do I put this politely, this soul-sucking, fun-sucking, Dilbert-like work environment that was just draining the soul out of me. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been there. We were just talking about my book, The Jerk-Free Workplace. And it's not that there were necessarily a lot of jerks there, but the culture was so bad, it was affecting people. And so people were not happy. People were not sharing their sense of humor. You'd walk down the hallway and people would go by you, giving you one of these as you went by, and then they'd look at you and it kind of sucked the fun out of the place for after a while. So I decided I had to quit and do something different with my life. I decided then and there to make it my mission in the world to talk about how work should not be sucking the soul out of you, how work should be inspiring. Work has such a huge impact on our lives, is what I've always believed. It goes so beyond a paycheck. It affects our mental and physical health, our families, our marriages, our personal life. It affects where you live often. It's just a wee bit of a time sucker. So I think we owe it to our customers, to our employees, to our family members, to our souls, to create as rocking a workplace as possible. So that's what I decided to launch my business, Humor at Work, to talk about the importance of just being more human, being more real at work, connecting, as you were talking about, David, at just a fundamentally human level to create more positive, inspiring workplaces.
That makes complete sense to me. I mean, I've had the full range of employment experiences. I mean, I've been basically working since I was probably, well, I had my own paper route as a kid. And then my first gig was corn detasseling, which is this Southwestern Ontario thing that may not be from your area, but basically you walk down and you pluck the tops off of corn. And that was my first kind of, group working environment. It was not the most stimulating group of people to work with. And it was not the most positive. I mean, the job sucked. It was less than minimum wage, terrible job. But I do remember it was kind of fun in the sense that you could chat with someone else while you're doing it. And you kind of made the best of what otherwise would be corn stabbing you in the face, very, very sweaty time.
You raise an interesting point, right? There's a difference between a challenging, even miserable job versus a miserable workplace. Mm-hmm. I've talked, one of my best friends in the world, he talks about how some of his happiest work days were working for the sewer department in a city in Canada. Right. And, he said that the job sometimes was challenging, stressful, gross, not a lot of fun, but because the team was so strong, because they all got along so well, they had so much fun, they connected so well at a personal level, it's one of his fondest memories.
Yeah, I had a job, summer camp job for 4 years every summer, and a lot of challenges and sleepless nights and really high energy drawing of your day. But I remember, the fond memories I have of the friendships I made there and the camaraderie of we're all pulling the rope in the same direction. Yeah. And each of us has a part to play in that. I wish I could still, I legitimately went into what I went to post-secondary education for, because I just wanted to continue as a camp counselor. It just wasn't a real gig, but we were trying to get the next best thing. So, a great.
What's your real job going to be when you grow up, right?
Yeah, camp counselor. So, that's really interesting. So, if you're distinguished, the environments that have that open communication, that humor, that just fun to be around space versus the stodgy dogfights, what separates the two things?
Well, I think one is just the focus on culture, the recognition. I think everybody says that, right? Everybody at least pays lip service to the importance of their workplace culture and that people matter, and everybody knows enough to say that that matters. But are they really following through? Are they intentional about building a great culture? So I've traveled all over the world in normal times, researching, writing, and speaking about inspiring workplace cultures. And that's for sure one of the things that they get right, is they're intentional about their culture. They know it takes work. It doesn't happen just by accident. You can't go buy your culture at IKEA. Nobody would understand the instructions, for starters, right? So you have to build your culture intentionally. And I think a lot of really successful leaders understand the importance of creating an environment where people are just free to be their authentic selves, where they don't have to put on a facade, a fake professional mask, and talk in this professional way. And they recognize that there's a difference between being somber and being serious and taking your job seriously. I mean, of course, we have to take our clients seriously. We have to take our work seriously, but it doesn't mean we have to take ourselves seriously and do everything with this, like we're attending a funeral, for goodness sakes. One of the things I always tell people is one of the keys to embracing humor is learning to laugh at the things you can't control in the world, at work, and especially learning to laugh at yourself. Because is it not a truism, after all, that the more seriously a person takes themselves, the less seriously we tend to take that person?
That is so
true. Which is a little bit ironic, right? Because those people who take themselves seriously are doing it because they want everyone to take them seriously. And the reality becomes, we're not taking you seriously, bucko, because you're taking yourself so ridiculously seriously.
It's so true. And so one concept we have within Monkey Life is a kind of front stage and there's backstage. And within the company, you have to be very clear about, you know, when we're front stage, it's sparkles, it's rainbows, it's guys, and then backstage, we could be like, oh man, that was really tough. That really sucked. Why did that customer do that to us? Or why did that vendor do that to us or whatever? But front stage, it's, and if you can get a clear delineation between those two things, it makes the front stage stuff easier to stomach because you've got a team of people behind you that really have your back. And then also when you go backstage, you can let your hair out a little bit and be like,
That's awesome. I love that. I forget who it was, but a client years ago who told me that their culture brand or tag is that they have a mullet culture, serious in the front, but party in the back, which is similar to what you're saying. And, I've interviewed and spoken to funeral home directors, EMTs, emergency room doctors, and so often they have an incredible sense of humor and sometimes a very black sense of humor, of course, but similar to what you're saying, David, they know there's an appropriate time and place for that humor. So they share that humor behind the scenes, not necessarily with the patients or families of patients, but it helps maintain their professionalism. They have to have that sense of humor in order to do the job that they do. And maintain their sanity and still be professional.
A little bit of gallows humor, I think, within the tribe makes a lot of sense. Absolutely.
For sure.
So how does that apply to the family? Let's talk about, your family's kind of a unit that is the core, and then you go out in the world. Is the same principle kind of apply, do you think, in terms of like, within the family, we have our own little stupid jokes that are, but do you know what I'm saying? Like, how might this apply to the family situation?
Yeah, I think it applies equally to the family situation. And I think we have to remember that barrier between our work life and our personal life is pretty artificial. We don't suddenly walk through this magic beam when we go into work and transmute into some other human being, right? I think workplaces, again, that get it right in terms of how they're engaging their employees and building their culture, understand that they're dealing with the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week human beings that come into their workplace. So I think just as how we treat each other at work impacts how we then treat each other outside of work. I mean, we carry home those emotions from work, those attitudes that we learn at work sometimes. We carry home the stressors. So for sure, it has a downstream impact, I think, on how we relate to our families once we get home, and vice versa too. I think the more positive, the more real, the more fun, the more humor we share within our families, the easier it becomes to just bring that side of ourselves to work with us every day.
Yep, that makes sense. What are the things that that you like, the practical things that a family could do, or a group of friends or whoever? They say, okay, you know, maybe we're a little stodgy, maybe it's a little stiff, maybe we're putting on the air of, like, you know, seriousness, if you will. What are the practical things that we can do as a family or as a group of friends to let our hair down a little bit and get beyond, you know, maybe, because some people are kind of born into that, like, open, free kind of families. And some people, they come from more of a stodgy background. Right. And how do you, if you want to make a change, how do you go about doing that?
There are literally hundreds of things that you could do to just kind of shift the needle a little bit. And I want to be clear, when we talk about this idea of bringing more humor into our lives, into our workplaces, or into our family lives, it's not always about being funny. And it's certainly not about telling jokes. Everybody gets worried about that, right? They're going to have to take stand-up comedy training. But it's way bigger than that. It's about being more just genuine, being more real, being more authentic, connecting at a human level. In fact, we know from studies that people trust people more who share a healthy sense of humor. And I think that's just because we're being more real. We're being less guarded when we laugh at ourselves and share our sense of humor. So it's not about being funny, and it's not about being an extrovert either. I'm in many situations an introvert. Some of the most successful leaders I've met, and some of them that have wicked senses of humor, are introverts. So it's nothing about being an extrovert or introvert either. And there are so many simple things you could do. You, as a family, you could start a humor bulletin board somewhere in your house where you collect funny stuff. Start a humor first aid kit with goofy stuff. So if somebody is, needs a little bit of a laugh, I do this with my wife sometimes, right? Because it's not a question of if we're all going to do one of these. It's when's the next time, right? So if I've done something that's upset my wife, I show up with this or any number of other goofy things I have in my humor first aid kit as a sort of, you know, mea culpa, I'm sorry, right? I mean, it's pretty hard to stay mad at somebody who's wearing this, right? Yeah. One really simple thing that I recommend people do, and this has been studied by the International Group of Humor Studies, of which I'm a member, that there was a study that showed that the fastest way to grow your sense of humor is to practice looking for the accidentally funny stuff in the world. So the unintentionally funny stuff. So make this a family goal to collect this stuff in a book, in a file. And when you set it as a goal, you'd be amazed at how much people start to see it everywhere. You see it in those weird newspaper headlines and those weird product warning labels. You know, I mean, it's everywhere out there. I shower when I used to travel a lot, spend a lot of time in hotel rooms, very often on the hotel shower cap, for example. They have a label that says fits one head only. Like, what are people doing in their hotel showers, right? My wife and I opened up a set of Christmas lights many years ago, and they had a big warning label, warning for indoor or outdoor use only. Like, what is the other use? Yeah. So look for this stuff as a family, make it a goal. And then, you know, a very simple thing you can do to create that lighter atmosphere, to get people to open up and share their sense of humor, is through questions. And even, you know, making this a daily practice at the dinner table, instead of asking, you know, what'd you learn in school today, or what happened in school today, what about this question? You know, what's the funniest thing that happened to you today? Mm-hmm. Right? Just a very simple shift. What's the funniest thing that happened to you last week or this week? And sharing those stories. What's the most embarrassing thing that happened to you? And asking weird questions is a great way to connect at a human level too. Whether you're just meeting somebody new for the first time, or you're connecting with people, asking different questions as opposed to the normal questions, right? Like, you know, how did you, if you could describe your last week by a movie title or song title, what would it be?
Right? Yep.
Just ask weird questions to get people to think in different funny ways.
And this is not me showing something here, but so part of our Bunky Life process, we sell a lot of cabin kits, but we've got little what we call connection cards. And they're basically a playing card, but every single one has an individual question. We took it up to a cottage we rented this past spring, and it was just so cool to like flip a card and then ask everybody around the family the question. We ended up not even playing cards, but it was just really interesting because we were with my in-laws on my wife's side, and it just stimulated a lot of different conversations that wouldn't have otherwise had. And it was just about being intentional about, let's just go out of the way to pull in a few off the wall questions. And it got conversation going for hours.
Oh yeah. I love that. I love those kind of questions. In fact, I wrote an ebook years ago. Now this is more aimed for the workplace, but similar idea. It is just called Inspiring Questions for Inspiring Workplace. And it's just a huge hit list of interesting, thought-provoking, and quirky questions that you can ask your teammates, right? Just
how many of those do you think would
apply in a different way? And
how many of those do you think would apply in a family situation?
Some of them for sure. Not all of them, but yeah, a certain number for sure would apply.
Pack it off and turn the inspiring questions for inspiring families. That would be a cool PDF. I think people would download that. Okay. Well, that makes complete sense. So asking questions, being deliberate about it, being intentional about it, sounds like if we could glean two meta principles out.
I'd like to take a short sponsor break to tell you about the company I founded, Bunky Life. What we're famous for are small log cabin kits called Bunkies that can be easily built in a weekend without needing a permit or a second mortgage. I've also authored the book, Bunky Life, Extra Space. Ultimately, we're in the business of helping families create extra space for more meaningful connection. And you can find out more at bunkylife.com. To see if your family might be ready for the Bunky Life, take the free 5-minute quiz at bunkylife.com/quiz. That's bunkylife.com/quiz. And now back to the show.
What? Tell us about the biggest turnaround you've seen in a culture, whether that's a company or a family. Tell us about, you know, the come to Jesus moment that you've helped people come to.
Yeah, well, there's many I could share. And that's the most rewarding part of my job, is when you see the light bulbs go off and where you see an organization that actually does take my messages seriously and implement some changes and turn their culture around in really powerful ways. And often it's just because they didn't know any better, or they didn't have any examples. And I think when I share stories of what workplaces are doing around the world to show that this isn't just theoretical, this is actually what's happening out there. All these cool companies doing these very cool things with incredible results. That's when I think people get really excited and they go, okay, we can do this. We can even do this in our business. And they get over those fears or those internal roadblocks. But boy, I've seen turnarounds. I was interviewing a company in Copenhagen, Denmark, an outside sign manufacturing company. They transformed their culture within just the matter of 6 months totally. And they did a very simple thing to transform their culture. They came up with four new values that were going to guide their culture. And one of them was a spirit of fun. That was very important to them, that they upped the fun factor. And then they did this dirt simple exercise. 1 week, let's focus on just one of those four new values, and everybody go crazy. Like live that value in outrageously loud ways. So the meter's going to go way, way over here. Maybe I'm trying to get on the camera here, way over here. Yeah. We maybe won't be able to sustain that in the long run, but at least for a week, let's just go crazy and show people what's possible with this value. Then week two, value two, week three, value three, down to four. Then they cycled back. They did this for 6 months. And after just 6 months, every employee agreed with the statement, I work for a brand new company.
Wow.
Which is pretty powerful, right? They totally transformed their culture because they turned it into habits, right? They turned it into practice. They turned those words into observable behaviors and attitudes that everybody could see and embrace.
Yeah. I see that as like almost one-to-one analogous to what you could do in a family too. That's like, what are our family values and how can we maximize them next week? That would be very, very interesting to try.
Yeah. And rituals, right? I'm a huge, so many, and I think families can do this as well. So many great workplaces are huge believers in the power of rituals and traditions. Rituals and traditions create that bond between people. They create that sense of shared history. They give everybody something to look forward to, and something to reminisce about. So they're incredibly powerful, and they can also help us form habits that we want to put into place. So we do this, and we already do this in families, right? A lot of people have rituals and traditions, whether it's going to church every Sunday, whether it's the reunion every, you know, the second weekend in August with the cousins. There's all sorts of different rituals and traditions that families already do, but coming up with even more, even if they're just simple ones, can have a huge impact on a family. Maybe it's a ritual to kick off the week with. Maybe it's a morning ritual at the breakfast table that everyone does together before you leave for the day. A dinner time ritual, maybe a Friday afternoon, right? There's no shortage of things you can do. Maybe even if it's just creating some habits like, nope, every Tuesday, come hell or high water, is family dinner time. We are all at the table Tuesday nights.
Yep. It makes complete sense to me. I mean, the family dinner, I think, is a tradition that's so important. I remember every single day we would eat at least dinner with our family as growing up. And it's something Carrie and I have managed to keep going within our little family. And it makes a difference. You know, that's where these conversations, these connections are going to happen. I don't know what the stats were, but it's I think it's less than half of American families and Canadian families now are eating together at least one meal a day. Yeah. And that's something that's pretty easy to fix. It's economical to make everyone's meal together, to be honest.
Yeah. And making sure that you have a rule about these little suckers not appearing anywhere near the dinner table would be my advice.
Yep. No, that's true as well. And turning them off. So within Bunky Life, we have a few values. One is family first, do it right, do it once. And then, you know, exceed, like, you know, surprise and delight the customers basically. Right. And so when we talk about family first, we can't just preach family first. Hey guys, buy this Bunky and put your family first. It has to be like, and within the company, you know, we also turn off our cell phones during family dinner and things like that. So I'm feeling inspired and simultaneously convicted by some of the things we're talking about, which is probably the best kind of conversation to have.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And David, I was going to just say your family first value there too. This is an interesting trend I've noticed in some of the more successful workplaces around the world, is they very much are intentional about connecting with the family members of their employees. They consider them, and I think this is so brilliant, they consider them part of the support team because they are part of the support team, right? So some of the really, really successful organizations, they purposely connect with the family members. They purposely create events that involve the kids and the spouses and the family members, and even involve the family members in sometimes workplace contests. Why do we just limit it to the employees? Why not include the family members? Free consultants.
Right.
but they take that seriously. There's a company I talk about a lot, Barrel Health Call Centers, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week call center, tough, tough work environment. But boy, they really are committed to connecting with the family, so much so that they create a magazine that goes to the homes of all the employees, that connects with the families within that big company, which I think is so cool.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you're thinking about quitting your job because it's getting tough, it's in a tough spot or whatever, I mean, who are you talking to? You're talking to your husband or your wife, and you're saying, I don't know with this job. And if they're saying, yeah, quit, because it, you know, that's going to be one direction. If they say, no, you know what, just remember 2 months ago when they sent me that care package and got me that spa treatment. My wife, for sure, she's in the business as well, but we tend to balance each other out. And I think that taking care of someone is also taking care of their family. They're one and the same ultimately.
Absolutely. Excuse me. I'm getting choked up. This is just so exciting. Your story reminded me of a company in Canada. Again, they have a great culture, and the CEO was sharing with me how their CFO got headhunted and offered double the salary at another company, double the salary, right? And the CEO said, well, look, you're the CFO. You know the numbers better than probably I know the numbers. So you know we can only do so much in terms of your pay. Here's what I want you to do, though. Go home and talk to your wife.
Yep.
He was very smart to do that, right? Because what happened, the CFO, of course, came back the next day and said, no, I'm good. I'm going to stay right here. And why did he come to that conclusion? Because his wife said, I don't care about the money. You've never been happier. You've never had less stress. You've never slept better. You've never been better with the kids. We don't need the money. We need you to be healthy and happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a point where, you know, more money is not a motivator for people. You know, it's hard to wrap your brain around that if you're kind of a success-driven kind of person. But there's definitely like a point. I mean, I was never at that point because prior to Bunky Life, I was always kind of a musician. So we did okay. We did fine. But it was never like, I never understood the idea of people that have more money than time. I never understood that at all until this past couple of years. And now I get it. Now I realize like, you know, money's not going to replace that time with my daughters. Money's not going to replace those conversations with my wife. Money's not going to replace the time with my grandparents. Yeah. And so connecting with people ultimately, I mean, to a certain point, you need to sustain your life and you need to make sure that there's gas in the car and the rent or the mortgage is paid. But beyond that, I can't say my life is 10 times better since I started making 10 times as much money.
Right. You know? Yeah. In my book, The Humor Advantage, I actually have the subheading in a chapter, more money isn't always more honey. And we know that people leave jobs to go to other work for less pay, even as a trade-off for other values. We know that there are all sorts of other things that boost our motivation and happiness way more powerfully than money does. And it's really hard for some people, as you say, to wrap their minds around that. But we know from so much research, and as you said, David, once you have a certain level of income to survive and you have your basic needs met, then there's a very, very little correspondence to increased happiness with increased money. You know, and one thing I remind people, even, you know, everybody wants the raise, right? Wouldn't it be great to get that raise? And of course, we're thrilled when we do. But what is that raise? What does that new salary become after about 2 months, 3 months? It becomes the new norm.
It's a new normal, absolutely, yeah.
So now it's just what you're paid. And now you're thinking, oh, geez, if only I had more money, right? And you could never get off that, what's called the hedonistic treadmill of just wanting more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that's fine. Once again, I'm a capitalist. If you want to go out and earn more and produce more value in the world, great. However, if it's at the expense of connection with those that matter in life, I think that you're making a Faustian bargain that you're not going to be ultimately look back on and say, I'm glad I made, you know, right? Yeah.
Totally with you. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, when we're all 106 on our rocking chairs, looking back at our lives, that's not what we're going to think about, right? And we're not going to think back to our workplaces and think, wow, I wish I took myself more seriously and I worked in more of a soul-sucking, fun-sucking workplace.
Right? Yes.
Nobody's going to think that. We're going to think, man, I wish I took myself a little less seriously if I had to do it over again. I wish I'd spent more time with the kids and my family. I wish I'd connected with more people and all those other things. And we know this from research, even. We know this from research when they've studied what people's regrets are on their deathbed in hospices, right? Nobody ever says, yeah, I wish I made a little more money. No, it's all these other values that rise to the top.
Yep, that makes complete sense to me. So when you think about meaningful connection, what instantly springs to mind?
One is, I guess, being authentic, again, being true to yourself. So not putting on any facade, not pretending to be someone that you aren't, and understanding the other person you're connecting with feels the same to you, right? So that you feel like that you're both being your genuine, true selves. I mean, how often do we all have stories in our lives where we might say to a friend at a certain, and maybe it's just a certain time in your life, but we've all had those conversations, I'm sure, where we've said, you know, I feel like I can be myself with you. And wouldn't that be great if we can say that with most people that we connect with, that we can be ourselves? So that is certainly one thing for sure. I think about connecting with people at a deeper level, I think it's going beyond the superficial small talk as well, right? I mean, I can get in front of 2,000 people on stage and be this total goofball and this high energy, funny speaker. But if I'm in a certain social situation, I can be incredibly shy and introverted. And I hate that the small talk that goes along with that, right? I would far rather have deeper, more meaningful connections, even if it's with somebody I've just met. I don't want to, you know, talk about the weather. And the, I'd like to know, you know, get down to some really cool conversations to find out what drives this person, what motivates this person, what inspires them. Why did you choose the career path that you chose? Why do you live here where you live? What do you love about living here? You know, what jazzes you in your time off? Just getting to some more meaningful conversations, I think, is so important.
Yeah, and I think you have to be intentional about it. I grew up in one side of my family has a very kind of cards to their chest kind of, you talk about the weather, you talk about sports, there's a certain kind of, pre-selected things to talk about. And, being deliberate about, let's choose to break free from that path. Let's choose to go another direction. And let's just choose to go a little deeper with what we talk about and what's acceptable, what the window of acceptable conversations might be. It's gone a long way. My father and I have had some really deep conversations lately because I just said, hey, let's just be honest about it. This is kind of the level of depth up to this point. This is kind of where it's at. And I would prefer it to go deeper. What would you think, and starting out that conversation, I found that to be really scary for me as a son, but also really got some really good stuff out of that and took our relationship to the next level, even in as adults.
Oh, that's very cool. And it is, I think it is tough for a lot of people to have those kind of conversations with their parents, right? And there's a wrapped up into all of this, trust is huge, right? I think you need to give trust in order to make those connections, those meaningful connections with people. But then when you make those meaningful connections, it also builds trust. In other words, I think there's a chicken and egg relationship here, right? Between trust and those meaningful connections.
Yep, that makes sense to me 100%. If you're able to kind of put yourself out there a little more, it gives them a little bit of rope to put themselves a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I guess if someone is interested in, obviously jerk-free workplace sounds fantastic. If you're an employer or even an employee, I think you could pass it to a boss and it might, if they're not a complete jerk, if there's 1% non-jerk in there, they might at least read it. How do we find out more about the new book? I mean, there's a litany of awesome books, but how do we find out that? How do we find out more about you as a speaker and just as a person?
Well, the main place you can go to, of course, is my virtual home away from home, my website, www.mikekerr.com. I've got videos on there. My books are on there, including the most recent one, The Jerk-Free Workplace. And it's not just to be clear, it's not just about not being a jerk. Really, at the heart of the book, it's about recognizing you don't want to be a jerk, but hey, let's move farther away from that to not just the neutral territory, but what does it mean to step up and be a frontline leader on your team in your workplace with the recognition that everybody can be a leader at work. It has nothing to do with your job title or position or power. And the more leaders at work you create, the more successful your company, your organization is going to be. That's why I love the mantra, leaders leading leaders. We are leaders leading leaders. So that's very much the heart of the book. So you can look at it through my website. It's available on Amazon, Kindle, Kobo, all the usual platforms. You can order it from there as well. I'd also invite people. I do a weekly e-newsletter, Inspiring Workplaces, that talks about creating more rocking, positive teams and workplaces. It's always got a little bit of humor, but some great ideas in there. And my YouTube channel, Inspiring Workplace. Twice a week, I upload videos talking about how to create rocking great workplaces and more human real connections, as we talked about today.
Okay, well, that is inspiring. And I invite everyone to check that out. It's just, for me, it's a convicting interview with you when I think about that, how to make sure I'm prioritizing family, make sure I'm prioritizing the time with family. But I hope that this is a meaningful and useful set of, chats for people that are listening. And I found it personally very valuable myself. So I appreciate your time so much, Mike. Thanks for making it. And have a fantastic day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much, David. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I wish you much humor and much laughter in the days and years ahead.
All right, fantastic. Thanks so much, Mike.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you've learned a lot, but beyond just mere intellectual entertainment, I hope it's changed the way you see your relationships and inspired you to take action and make a connection with someone in your life today. do it. I'd love to hear about it. And you can always email me directly at david@funkylife.com with the subject Meaningful Connection. Love to hear your stories.